You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that because you're already listening to a podcast.
Welcome to the Useless Information Podcast, my collection of fascinating true stories from the flip side of history. My name is Steve Silverman, and today's story is titled The French Nobleman. But before we do that, I just wanted to thank everyone who downloaded the Kindle version of my book, Einstein's Refrigerator, and made it the number one downloaded free Kindle book all that particular week. Now, for a book that was written more than 10 years ago, and it really was just the best of my website in the late 1990s, I really was shocked by how well it did. I guess I can jokingly say that I am now a best-selling author, although I don't know if a free book could be considered a best-selling book, if you know what I mean. And now for today's question of the day, which is about United States governors. Samuel Houston is the only person ever to have been elected to be governor of two different states. So which two states were they? And here they are in alphabetical order. You need to pick two of the states to be correct. So your choices are 1, Arkansas, 2, Indiana, 3, New Mexico, 4, Tennessee, 5, Texas, or 6, Virginia. You have to pick two of those. Again, Samuel Houston is the only person ever to have been elected governor of two different states. And which ones were they? Were they 1, Arkansas, 2, Indiana, 3, New Mexico, 4, Tennessee, 5, Texas, or 6, Virginia? Again, pick two of those. As always, I'll keep you in suspense and let you know the correct answer at the very end of this podcast. And now for today's story that I've titled The French Nobleman, which begins with the death of an elderly man on September 5, 1946, at the county hospital located in Chicago, Illinois. Documents indicated that the name of the deceased was simply A. Terry, just A. period Terry, age 67, and the cause of death was listed as heart trouble. His last known address was a small attic room at 441 Surf Street in that same exact city. Now, nothing about the man or his death seemed out of the ordinary. He was a tall guy, 6'2" in height and about 200 pounds in weight. Now, that's about 1.9 meters and 91 kilograms for my international listeners. He was just a lonely old man who appeared to be down on his luck for quite some time. The county hospital called his landlord to let him know that his tenant, Mr. Terry, had died. Now, the deceased had no known relatives in the United States, but the landlord knew that he'd associated with members of the late Henry E. Rice's family. So the landlord decided to contact the Rice family to inform them of the passing of Mr. Terry. And it's at this point that the story turned from mundane to what I consider to be a really great love story. It turns out that the Rice family had met Mr. Terry while they were vacationing in France about 35 years earlier. But Mr. Terry was not your ordinary French citizen. He just happened to be a French nobleman whose full name was
Marquis Pierre-Marie Amar Le Bout de Château Thierry Bonamoir.
Now that's clearly not me. That was my wife. She lived in Paris for 5 years, so I thought she could do a better job than me butchering it. Anyway, what a name. It's a mouthful. It's no wonder his death certificate listed his first name simply as the letter A. The famous Chateau Thierry was named after his family, and he was the eldest son of a French Catholic historian. At the time that the Rice family met him, Pierre was a brilliant mathematician who had the reputation of being able to, quote, add as fast as any adding machine. That's the end of the quote. The Marquis took one look at Henry Rice's daughter, and it was love at first sight. The family returned to the United States, but her brother Harry stayed behind in France for just a bit. And with the help of Harry, the Marquis began to write letters in somewhat broken English to the American girl that he worshipped so much. Then, in 1913, he decided it was time to pick up and go to the United States to be with the girl of his dreams. Now, in doing so, the Marquis gave up his title and walked away from the family's estate. He was now an ordinary citizen, just like you and me, a commoner. Now, if I had been alive back then, I would have said, "Welcome to the club." Okay, maybe not. When he first came to the United States with the help of the Rice family, he gained employment at the Livestock, that's two words, Livestock Exchange National Bank. Then he switched to the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago for the next 14 years. Having worked as both a bank clerk and an auditor back in France, this was the perfect job for such a skilled mathematician. You may have noticed that I never ever mentioned the woman's first name, and there's a good reason for that. That's because the press only mentioned her as being one Mrs. George E. De Cruyff. And De Cruyff is much, much different from her maiden name of Rice or the Marquis' last name of Thierry. Yes, she broke the nobleman's heart. Just 2 years after the Marquis sacrificed everything that he owned for the woman that he loved, she went off and married someone else. I can just imagine the pain that he felt at this time. Oh, must have been awful. And when the Great Depression hit, the Marquis was just too proud to ask anyone for help, and that included the Rice family. They later learned that he had lived for nearly a year on a diet of cracked wheat breakfast food. His last job was as a night clerk at a residential hotel, which was located at 2828 Pine Grove Avenue. That was right around the corner from the attic room that he was renting. I bet you that the guests never suspected that the white-haired man that handed them their room keys every night was once a distinguished man of French nobility. And yet through all this time, he continued to worship the woman that he loved, even though, of course, she could not love him in return. After his death, her brother Harry, and that's the same Harry that helped the Marquis write those love letters in the first place, and Jack Rubens, the public administrator assigned to the case, they searched through the Marquis's attic room. And there they uncovered a collection of newspaper articles regarding a number of French resistance movements that had fought against Nazi occupation during World War II. And of course, the war had just ended about a year prior to his passing. They also found an envelope that contained receipts for money that he had paid to support one of these French resistance groups, which was called France Forever. And lastly, they found $1,000 worth of $25 U.S. savings bonds that he had purchased with his savings. And although he never got the girl of his dreams, she, in fact, was the one that planned his funeral, and she also arranged for the former Marquis to be buried with dignity in the Rice family plot at All Saints Cemetery, right near her deceased father. I can't help but wonder if she secretly did love him after all. Useless, useful, I'll leave that for you to decide.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
And now for a few words from our retro sponsor.
Everyone is voting for Jack, 'cause he's got what all the rest lack. Everyone wants to back Jack. Jack is on the right track, 'cause he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. 1960's the year for his high hopes. Come on and vote for Kennedy. Vote for Kennedy and we'll come out on top. Oops, there goes the opposition girl. Oops, there goes the opposition girl. Oops, there goes the opposition girl. Pop. K-E-double-N-E-D-Y. Jack's the nation's favorite guy. Everyone wants to back Jack. Jack is on the right track, 'cause he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. 1960's the year for his high hopes. Come on and vote for Kennedy. Vote for Kennedy. Keep America strong. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling.
My wife and I were watching an episode from the first season of the TV show Mad Men last night, and they made a quick reference to Frank Sinatra supporting Kennedy, so I immediately thought of this promotional recording and decided to include it in the podcast. Now, this was originally a 45 RPM record, which had very limited circulation and is among the most sought after of all Frank Sinatra memorabilia. So, if you happen to own a copy, it could be worth quite a few bucks. This is a reworking of the song High Hopes, which for younger people, you know, they may not be familiar with it. But it was a hit for Sinatra back in 1959, reaching number 30 on Billboard's Hot 100 chart. The song was recorded for the Frank Capra film A Hole in the Head and won the 1959 Academy Award for Best Original Song. Now, it's not what I personally consider to be one of Sinatra's better songs, but I bet that many more people remember the song than the title of the movie that it came from. And now for a few totally useless, yet totally true tidbits from history. It's time for what I like to call News of the Weird Past. And our first tidbit is dated March 7th of 1942, where it's reported that Adolf Hitler, yes, Adolf Hitler, showed up at the local draft board in Detroit, Michigan. Of course, this was a different man named Adolf Hitler, whose hometown just happened to be Moscow, as in Moscow, Michigan. But the name appears to have had a detrimental effect on this particular Adolf Hitler's life, as it did the other one. Anyway, he was recently unemployed and had been living at a local mission. The state unemployment agency was able to find him a job, but my guess is that his name haunted him for the rest of his life. Our next tidbit is dated July 22nd of 1959, where it was reported that Charles Koval, a missile plant engineer, had noticed a constant fine mist falling in a 20 square foot section of his San Diego, California backyard. Yet, oddly, no rain had fallen. Meteorologists, other engineers, and newsmen were puzzled by the constant fall of sprinkles, from above. Enter the science investigators, led by Dr. Rudolf Preisendorfer, who is a physicist at the University of California. He climbed a tree above the wet area and located the source of the mist. It turns out that it was the work of insects, leafhoppers to be exact. The leafhoppers, whose diet consists mainly of plant juices, are known to excrete a sweet bodily fluid commonly known as honeydew. And our last tidbit for today is dated January 8th of 1964, where it's reported that F.B. Ellis, who headed an office supply company in Beckenham, England, was extremely puzzled by the sudden surge in the sale of rubber finger sheaths. Now, they really don't use those too much today, but those are the little rubber fingertips that workers would slide over their fingers to protect them from paper cuts and also grab each sheet of paper more easily. Now, even more of a mystery was why only one size, size 00, was selling so well. Well, it turns out that businesses were buying them by the gross for their office staff to slide over their stiletto heels and protect the expensive parquet or tile floors from damage. And now the answer to today's question of the day. And I had mentioned that Samuel Houston was the governor of two different states. And I gave you a list and asked you to choose which of those states it was. So your choices were 1, Arkansas, 2, Indiana, 3, New Mexico, 4, Tennessee, 5, Texas, and 6, Virginia. Now I hope with a last name like Houston, you picked Texas, since the city of Houston in Texas is named in his honor. But did you get the second state? It turns out it was Tennessee. Houston was elected governor of Tennessee on October 1st of 1827. He then married Eliza Allen on January 22nd of 1829, but she left him shortly after in April. Houston then turned to alcohol and soon resigned from the office on April 16th of 1829. For the next 2 years, Houston lived among the Cherokees in Arkansas Territory, where he operated a trading post and married a part Cherokee widow. Then, in 1830 and again in 1832, Houston went to Washington, D.C. to expose the frauds that the government officials committed against the Cherokees. During his 1832 visit, Ohio Congressman William Stanberry falsely accused Houston of corruption. So Houston confronted Stanberry on Pennsylvania Avenue and pummeled him with his hickory cane. Stanberry then drew a pistol, but it failed to fire. Houston was found guilty of assaulting a congressman by the House of Representatives and awarded Stanberry $500 in damages. But instead of paying, Houston fled to Texas, which was still part of Mexico at the time. After Texas separated from Mexico, he was twice elected to be president of the new republic. Once Texas was annexed to the U.S., he first became a senator, and in 1859 he was elected governor. That makes Sam Houston the only person to be governor of two different U.S. states. He is also the only governor to have also been the head honcho of a foreign state. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's story on the French nobleman. There was a similar story probably about a month ago about the Duchess of Alba giving away her entire fortune for love. I'm not sure if you saw that or not. If I can find it, I'll post it on my Facebook page. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the story on the French nobleman, as well as our question of the day on Sam Houston, listening to our retro sponsor, which was Sinatra singing for Kennedy, and of course the news of the weird past tidbits, which included Adolf Hitler being drafted, the bug juice mystery, and of course the rubber finger sheath mystery. I do apologize for not doing a podcast in August. I was just incredibly busy. I gutted the whole upstairs of my house, and we've been remodeling, and I work from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to sleep. So I really didn't have time to work on the podcast. Now, if you'd like to read more true stories just like this, please be sure to get a copy of one of my books. They are Einstein's Refrigerator, which I think a lot of people downloaded, and Lindbergh's Artificial Heart. Both are written by me, Steve Silverman, and they're available from your local bookseller, online, and from your local library. As always, additional resources, including scans of some of the original research documents I use, maybe some additional comments on the podcast and some related links, can be found on my Facebook page at www.facebook.com/useless-information-podcast. That's all one word, useless information podcast. So facebook.com/useless-information-podcast. If for some reason you'd like to contact me, simply drop me an email at useless@steve.silverman.name. That's useless@steve.silverman.name, or you can visit my website, which is uselessinformation.org. The Facebook page also, of course, has links to contact me. Lastly, as always, if you could log into iTunes, if you've never done that, leave some positive comments to try and increase the number of listeners to the podcast. And I just want to conclude by thanking everybody who did download the book. The publisher told me they were really surprised as to how many copies were downloaded. I have to say I was shocked having a number one book that no one asked me to do a radio interview or anything like that. When the book came out, there were a lot of interviews done, and not a single one came from having a number one book. I'm not sure what that means. I tend to think because I tell great stories, I'd be good on morning radio, but you never know. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I hope you tune in the next time. Bye.